Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark LeVeonier. Coming up in this hour, Romance, we'll hear the show with that name coming up later in the hour from 1956. But right now, it's the Silver Theater. From February 18th, 1940 on CBS, we enjoy the talents of Herbert Marshall and Francis Robinson in the play Heaven Is Like That.
International Silver Company presents The Silver Theater, starring Herbert Marshall in Heaven Is Like That, directed by Conrad Nagel. Brought to you this week by International Sterling, world-famous solid silver. And here is our director, Conrad Nagel.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We welcome you to the 20th program in the current Silver Theater series. Today, we're glad to present once again Herbert Marshall, who, supported by Francis Robinson, stars in True Boardman's original drama, Heaven Is Like That. Many other brilliant stars will also appear on our stage soon. To mention a few, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., Paulette Goddard, Cary Grant, Humphrey Bogart, Edna Best, and Thomas Mitchell. At the end of our program today, I'll tell you which of them is to be our next guest. Now, there's just a moment before Silver Curtain goes up. A moment we'd like to devote to success. Your success. If you will, Dick.
Nearly all of you, ladies and gentlemen, have your own measure of success. Some one thing that in your eyes means you're a person. You've arrived. For a man, that goal is often the purchase of a particularly distinctive-looking car. For a woman, it's more apt to be the pride of a beautiful home, surroundings and possessions that give her background and personality. And there are few things that contribute so richly to that feeling as sterling silver. Because sterling is solid silver. Silver to be enjoyed not just a month or a year, but a lifetime. International Sterling is a particularly superb example of solid silver craftsmanship. Created by the foremost silver house in the world, International Sterling has such brilliant design, such rich elegance, that to many people, it is the sterling of all sterlings. But words alone do little justice to its really glorious beauty. The thing to do is visit your silverware dealer, see it yourself, and learn how easy it is to own silver you can be proud of all the days of your life. International Sterling Silver.
And now the house lights dim and the silver curtain rises on the first act of Heaven Is Like That, starring Herbert Marshall as Christopher Lane, with Francis Robinson as Eileen. The scene is London, 5 years ago. At his flat in the smart West End district, Christopher Lane is giving a party. As they always do, Christopher's guests are enjoying themselves immensely. And as for Christopher himself...
Mr. Lane, sir.
Yes, Wilson?
I beg your pardon, sir, but Dr. Rogers is in the library. He says he must speak to you privately.
Oh, I can't. I have guests.
He said it was most important, sir.
Oh, well. Excuse me, all of you. Rogers, old man.
Hello, Chris. I thought you were going to ring me up the morning after I examined you.
I'm sorry, Doctor, but there was no rush about it. I only bought the insurance in the first place because Freddie Tillman needs the business. You know,
Chris, I'm serious. I've got to talk to you.
All right, let's have it.
In many ways, the medical profession has made great strides. You might even say we've accomplished miracles. In others...
Yes?
Well, we've failed. Thus far, that is. There are certain diseases that we've been unable to conquer. One of them is a very rare blood condition called leukemia.
I've heard of it.
Yes, then you've undoubtedly heard also that at least certain cases are incurable.
Yes, I think I knew that. Yes, I read about... Wait a moment. You're not trying to say this. That I...
That's just what I am trying to say, my boy.
I don't believe it. As well as you are.
Oh, well, I would have said so, too. But it so happens the blood tests don't lie. I'm terribly sorry, Chris. Believe me.
There's... What do you mean, there's nothing to be done?
Well, naturally, we'll try treatments, but...
How long? I want the truth.
1 year at most. More probably 10 months.
10 months. Drink, Rogers?
No, Chris. And you shouldn't either. In your condition, it's most dangerous.
I give you a toast.
Chris.
A little out of season, but still fitting. Very fitting. Dr. Rogers, I give you a happy new year.
Darling, where have you been? What's wrong?
Wrong? Why should anything be wrong? I'm going out, that's all.
But your party...
Hang the party, I'm going out. I happen to feel like walking. Alone. Any objections?
But Chris...
I said another brandy. Double.
Oh, yeah, just, sir. But begging your pardon, sir. Oh, shouldn't you call it quits? After all, you had a good many before you came here. And...
Give over, Amy. Let the gentleman have his drink if he wants it.
Oh, all right. Here you are, sir.
Thank you.
Good blimey. He just downs my gale, he does.
Yeah, here's your money.
Oh, but wait, sir, your change. And how about a cab, sir? This ain't no part of London for a gentleman, sir. Especially a night like this and you unsteady like. Huh. Well, how do you like that?
I likes it, Amy. I likes it.
What are you up to, Davy?
Nothing at all, Amy, nothing at all. But did you see that wallet on him? Jerry. Jerry, lad, here, wake up. There's work for us this night.
It's still not clear. You say you found me in the street?
Nearly 2 hours ago. You must have fallen, and there was no one else to help you. I couldn't just leave you lying there, so I brought you to my room. Drink more of that tea.
But how did you get me up here?
You came too, enough to walk, with me helping you. And now, if you'll excuse me, I'll get on with my packing.
Who are you?
My name's Eileen.
Packing? What for?
Oh, I have to leave here in the morning, unless I get a job, that is.
I see. What kind of a job have you been looking for?
I'm in service. I was downstairs maid to Mrs. Gammer for 2 years, until she died last autumn. That's where I got this.
A silver teapot. Mrs. Gammer gave it to you?
Lord, no. I left it on the fire one day and burnt a hole in the bottom. She was frightfully angry and took full payment for it from my wages. So now it's my personal private treasure in a way. All I've got, that is.
Well, I should say it was a treasure. Lovely one.
Of course, I'll have to have it mended for him. To make his tea, I mean.
Him? Don't tell me you have a husband.
Oh, not yet. But when I get one, I will, of course, someday. Do I look like a girl who wouldn't get a husband?
Not at all, no. I'm sure you'll get the very best of husbands. And now...
Oh, are you going?
Yes, thanks to you, I believe I can manage now. And you've been more than kind. I'd like to show you my appreciation by leaving...
What is it?
A minor matter, young lady. But I'll trouble you for my money.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I had more than 50 pounds of it when I left home tonight. Now it's gone.
50 pounds? But you... Oh, so that's what they were about.
Who?
When I came up to you, I saw some men beside you. But when I called, they disappeared into the fog.
And my money with them.
What's funny?
It's absurd. There's every reason in the world for me to think you're lying. But I know somehow that you're not.
Then you know what's true. I never lie.
Eileen, how old are you?
18, sir.
What would you do if you had only 1 year to live?
I'd pray.
And after that?
I don't know. I never thought. But I guess I'd try to decide just who to give the teapot to.
That's really all you'd think of. But what about yourself? What about filling those last months with all the pleasure you could find?
Oh, good heavens. You don't know much, do you?
Don't I?
Who ever heard of finding any happiness by going out and looking for it?
But one would find it in giving things away, huh?
Of course. It's taking things from others that's hard. But giving things... That's easy.
Is it? Eileen, suppose you had, instead of just a silver teapot, let's say £1,000 to give away.
You might as well say 20,000.
All right, I will say 20,000. You see, I do have just 1 year to live.
Oh. Oh, it's not true.
I found out myself tonight.
But are you sure? It may be a mistake.
No, it's true enough. And because it's true, I'm interested in what you say. Suppose I were to spend my year the way you'd spend it in my place. Do you think you could help me?
You mean help you to give money away?
Just that.
But why do you need help? Just do it.
But you know where there's real need. I don't. I'll wager you could think right now of a dozen people who need money, and badly.
Well, there's always Mrs. Davis. She's been sick ever so long. And then there's Melio.
Melio?
The bootmaker's oldest boy. He could be a wonderful violinist someday, but he needs lessons with a real master. And there's... Oh, you're right. There are so many to be helped.
Then you'll do it, Eileen?
Are you sure you're sober now?
Oh, yes, I'm quite sober.
And you're not crazy? It's hard to tell these days.
And I'm not crazy.
All right, then. I will help you. But why are you doing it?
Why? I'm not quite sure. Maybe it's because my year is suddenly very precious to me. I've always tried the other recipes for happiness. They never worked. Perhaps yours will.
It's the following day, and just outside Christopher's bank in St. Martin's Place at the appointed hour...
Well, here's the first installment. Take it, Eileen.
£1,000. Actually, £1,000. And in my own hands.
I suppose you've already planned how to dispose of it?
Oh, yes, I have. It's 400 to Mrs. Davis, 300 for Melio.
Never mind the details. I'm leaving that to you.
Well, I'll bring receipts. It should be done by 4 o'clock.
Good. Then I'll meet you at my flat.
Oh, but I couldn't do that.
No?
It would hardly be proper, sir.
At your room, then?
That's not much better.
Oh, I see. Well, where can you suggest, considering all the proprieties I need?
There's always a public park. Hyde Park, for instance, near Marble Arch.
Hyde Park near Marble Arch it is. 4 o'clock.
Very good, sir.
And look, my name's Christopher, Christopher Lane.
Yes, Mr. Lane.
Christopher.
Yes, Mr. Christopher.
All right, you win. Goodbye, Eileen. Till 4 o'clock.
Hey, mister.
Yeah?
Would you be Mr. Christopher Lane, sir?
Yes, I'm Christopher Lane.
Well, a girl told me to give you this.
Thank you. Oh.
Oh. Oh, I say, have I been fetching all that money and without even knowing it?
Yes, £1,000. Listen, where was the girl when she gave you this?
At Mrs. Park's rooming house on Burberry Street. She was near crying, sir.
Here, take this for your trouble.
Oh, I say, a pound note? Thank you, sir.
Taxi. Here, taxi.
No need for you to come. I'll set you back the money.
Why? That's what I want to know. Eileen, you're crying.
And suppose I am. A girl has a right to cry if she wants to.
Certainly, but she usually has a reason as well. Do you want to tell me?
No.
Then perhaps I can tell you. Your friends wouldn't take the money you were so anxious to give them.
How did you know? Oh, Mr. Christopher, I don't understand it. Mrs. Davis was all of a sudden angry when I offered her her share. She said, whatever gave me the idea that she would take charity?
But surely you didn't stop at Mrs. Davis?
Melio's father said I must have stolen the money. How can you laugh? I've ruined everything.
Well, I wouldn't say it was quite as bad as that. You've just overlooked one thing. The snobbery of the very poor. It's infinitely stronger than the snobbery of the very rich.
But what can we do if people won't take help when it's offered to them?
We can masquerade it, Eileen. We can make it look like providence. And there's no one so poor... he doesn't still believe in Providence.
How do you mean?
Well, suppose you leave that part of it to me.
Oh, very well, Mr. Christopher.
Look, you couldn't call me just plain Christopher.
Oh, no, sir. It would hardly be proper with my being in service and you a gentleman.
All right. But you will go through with our bargain now?
I don't know.
Or something else?
Yes.
What is it?
I don't think I could stand it.
Stand what?
Well... you know how it is when you're around someone a good deal, even just working with them. You get attached to them, in a respectful sort of way, I mean.
And you're afraid you'd get attached to me?
I couldn't help it. And then to see you day after day, always knowing in my heart you were only waiting for... I couldn't.
You mean it's my dying that you're afraid of?
Not just the dying, but after... if we just knew what was beyond, it might be different.
But I do know. And because I know, I'm not afraid.
You really know? Tell me, what's it like?
Like? I mean, when in all your life were you the happiest?
In all my life? Well, I suppose it was the summer Mrs. Gammer took a country house. In Devonshire, it was.
I know Devonshire.
Then you must know what I mean. The soft green rolling hills and the valleys in between with primroses and daffodils in bloom. And the houses, almost like they were painted against the sky.
Well, Eileen, it's very much like that.
You mean after?
Yes. You see, most people never realize that what we call heaven is really our fondest memories recaptured and our secret hopes all realized. And so I'm sure that in your heaven, there are the rolling hills, the valleys filled with flowers, even the painted houses against the sky, and in every house, a whole row of shining silver teapots.
But you say that's heaven for me. What about yours?
Mine? It's very much the same. So surely that's no place for either of us to be afraid of, is it?
Oh, it would seem foolish to be afraid of that.
Of course it would. Now let's get to work. First, there's Mrs. Davis. What would be the best antidote for her overdose of pride? Mrs. Davis, you had, I believe, a cousin, Melissa, who went to Australia some 30 years ago.
Melissa? Well, I'm not sure now. I've had a good mess of cousins in my time. My father was one of 11 children,
yes,
you know.
Yes, yes, very interesting. The point is, Mrs. Davis, it is my duty as a member of the firm of Moore, Scantlebury and Coote to inform you that your cousin died in Australia and left you the sum of, £397.09 and 6p.
Oh, merciful heaven. You don't mean it.
I do mean it.
Oh, poor dear Melinda.
Melissa.
Oh.
And here is the bequest in cash.
Scholarship for Emilio Carlotti, £400. Four sweepstakes prize to Jerry Marley, £500. Purchase of worthless furniture as antiques from Mrs. Higgins.
What's our total now? Do you have the figures?
I was just checking them. We've given out a total of £15,400.
That's nearly £2,000 a month, just as we planned it.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, why are you so depressed today? And how many times have I told you to buy a new dress?
But I have, sir, each time you've told me.
Well, then each new one looks just like the old one.
Each new one is just like the old one.
Oh, that's absurd. And what about your hair? I told you to have it fixed, made softer.
Oh, I couldn't fluff it more than this.
Oh, couldn't you? Come here, Eileen.
Yes, Mr. Christopher.
Do you realize that the Lord made you beautiful because he wanted you that way?
Did he, sir?
Now, tomorrow I want your hair done properly. Do you understand? That's an order.
I'll try.
And you'll also try to walk more gracefully. Here, I know. Hand me that book.
This one?
Mm-hmm. Now, hold it there on top of your head.
Like this? Must I?
Yes. Now, walk across the room. Keep your back straight. Go on.
No.
No?
It just happens, Mr. Christopher, that I saw that movie, too.
Movie?
Yes, Pygmalion.
Oh.
And if you have the idea of making a lady out of me, you're wasting your time.
But you are a lady in everything that matters.
I'm not. I'm a servant girl, and I know my place. What's England coming to if people keep trying to push out of their own class?
Maybe class distinctions aren't as important now as they used to be.
They are to me.
Eileen, listen to me. For months now, I've wanted to tell you...
Mr. Christopher, we have work to do. Hadn't we better get back to it?
Dr. Rogers will see you now, Mr. Lane.
Thank you.
Hello, Chris.
Rogers, what do you know of Dr. Anton Marx?
Marx? I've met him. He's just come here from Budapest.
Yes, and there was a report in the paper this morning that has a cure for leukemia. An operation.
I knew about that, Chris.
You knew?
Yes, and I decided not to tell you. Marx has a theory and nothing more. The operation he proposes has never been performed. Of course, any patient submitting to it would be serving science, I suppose. Even if only by proving the theory false. But as to his surviving the operation...
Yes? What chance would he have?
Not more than 1 in 500.
And in my case, without the operation, how long have I?
Well, I can't be positive. You've altered things considerably by the life you're living now. If you'd gone on as you were, you wouldn't be on your feet today. You may have another 6 months, Chris.
I see. Well, I'll take my 6 months and forget Dr. Marx. Well, you did wear the dress.
You said I had to. What's happening?
You'll see.
I finished the accounts. It's all spent.
Good. That means our job is done.
I know.
Eileen, come here.
Well?
Look.
A dinner party. But there are only two places.
Have you forgotten what night this is?
What night?
Our anniversary, Eileen. It was a year ago tonight that you discovered me in Burberry Street. And there's another reason. I wanted to give you this.
What is it?
A deed. A deed to a farm in Devonshire. Green rolling hills with flowers in the valleys. And just one house that looks painted against the sky.
But you shouldn't have done it.
Why should I give to everyone else? And not to the one person who taught me the real joy of giving.
Oh, Mr. Christopher.
Eileen. Will you go there with me? For whatever time is left. I know it's selfish of me, but...
I can't. You mustn't ask me.
I want you to marry me.
And who am I to marry you?
You're the girl I love. The girl who loves me.
And if I do love you, what does it matter? Does that make us any less far apart?
That makes no difference.
But it does. It must.
You're going to marry me.
No, I'm not. I'm going away. Our work is done. Our agreement's ended. So I'll just say goodbye, Mr. Christopher.
Eileen, you can't have understood.
Please, let me go.
I love you.
Please, let me go. And forgive me if I can't stay for the party. But I couldn't. Why did you have to put it into words?
Wait. At least let me send you home in a taxi.
No. If I'm going back to my own life, I'd as well start right now. I'll take the underground. Goodbye.
Eileen.
Pardon me, sir, but wouldn't you like more light in here?
No, and turn off that radio, will you?
You still wouldn't care for a little supper, sir.
No, just leave me alone.
This program could bring
sir.
A special news announcement. A serious accident occurred in the London Underground less than an hour ago.
Wait, don't turn that off.
An unknown number of persons are dead and scores injured in the crash near Burberry Street Station.
Burberry Street?
All the details
Mr. Lane, sir,
as soon as
what's wrong?
Of course I have called the other hospitals. Are you sure she's not there? Yes, the name is Eileen Walsh. She's 19. About 5'2" and... What? Oh, my God.
And we've done everything possible, Mr. Lane. But with a spinal fracture, well...
There's no hope at all.
I'm sorry.
I may go in now?
Certainly.
Eileen.
Oh, Mr. Christopher. Now I really have spoiled the anniversary, haven't I? Funny, too. I ran to catch that train.
Eileen.
Yes?
Surely it doesn't matter now.
Matter?
The gentleman and the servant girl? That couldn't make a difference at a time like this.
I don't suppose it could.
I do love you, Eileen. So much.
And I love you, Miss... I mean, Christopher.
Well, there surely is a clergyman in the hospital.
All right. I'd be happy to marry you.
And whom God hath joined together, let no man put asunder.
Thank you, Father. Eileen.
About the teapot... You'd better give it to some girl who's not married.
I will.
And have it mended so she can make tea for her man when she finds him.
I'll have it mended.
Christopher.
Yes?
Would you tell me once again?
Tell you?
What it's like after. The green hills and the meadows and the houses like they were painted against the sky. Because what we call heaven...
Is really
our
fondest memories recaptured, our secret hopes all realized. And that's nothing to be afraid of because... Eileen. Eileen! Goodbye, my darling.
still not too late for you to change your mind.
But I'm not going to Rogers.
Oh, don't go through with it. I beg you. Forget that you ever heard of this operation.
Well, I did hear of it. And I'm glad. Now. All right, I'm ready.
Very well. We'll take him into surgery, nurse.
Rogers, there's just one thing.
Well?
The chances of my coming through this little session. What did you say they were?
1 in 500.
Can't you make it 1 in 1,000?
Well, thank you, Barr. Beautiful performance. We'll have a word from our star, ladies and gentlemen, Herbert Marshall, in just a moment. Right now, though, I'd like to tell you about next Sunday's Silver Theater performance. Our star is a great favorite of yours, Cary Grant, who will appear in a story written especially for him. We're sure you'll want to hear Cary in his newest radio hit. And now today's star, Herbert Marshall.
Thank you, Conrad. It's been fun treading the boards of your Silver Theater. And I'd like to bow in the direction of Miss Frances Robinson, who's really a grand little trooper. We ought to award her a medal or something.
Well, medals are kind of useless, Bart. How about something that every woman should be proud to own and proud to show her friends, too, huh?
You couldn't be an international sterling silver, could you, Conrad?
Well, Bart, every real lady deserves solid silver, doesn't she?
Well, then our heroine deserves a whole service of international sterling. Wrap it up, Conrad. And now I've got to be off. Thanks for everything, and I hope we get together again real soon. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Bart. We'd love to have you back again. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is Conrad Nagel bidding you all good evening and thank you. See you next Sunday with Cary Grant.
In the meantime, remember, when you buy solid silver, be sure to look for the name of the world's foremost silver house, International. International Sterling Silver. Original music on today's program was composed and conducted by Felix Mills. This is Dick Joy speaking for International Sterling.
Herbert Marshall will be seen in the forthcoming RKO production, Bill of Divorcement. Frances Robinson is appearing currently in the Universal picture, The Invisible Man Returns. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Silver Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 18th, 1940, on CBS. It's an hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levinier. And now on to the series romance from September 22nd, 1956, featuring an actress's story, The Law and Miss Deborah. Irene Winston penned the script, and she was known on radio in the 1930s as Tiger Lil on the Jungle Jim series, and was a character actress on many other shows, like The Adventures of Nero Wolfe, The Mysterious Traveler, The Lineup, and more, and even was featured as Mrs. Emma Thorwald, or Raymond Burr's ill wife, in Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window, the couple that Jimmy Stewart, the leading man, was spying on. Enjoy her story next on Romance.
Now, from Hollywood, Romance. Transcribed stories of love and adventure, of comedy and crisis, of conflict and human emotion. Today, the story of the first lady lawyer of the land. It's written by Irene Winston and stars Alice Backus in The Law and Miss Deborah.
In 1793, a state of war existed between France and Great Britain. And for the protection of these United States, our President George Washington issued his proclamation of neutrality. Unhappily, this act did not extend to the state of war then existing between the Commonwealth of Virginia and my daughter, Miss Deborah Lynn Page. It began at an ordinary council meeting when Proctor Gormley tugged at his new waistcoat and then held up a well-worn sheaf of papers. The instant I saw them, I groaned aloud.
Gentlemen, there remains one more item on the agenda.
Not again.
Yes, Judge Page, again. Gentlemen, we have here the petition of Miss Deborah Lynn Page requesting a license to practice the law here in Cumberland County. The chair recognizes Mr. Bartikoff.
I thought we referred that to Richmond.
Oh, five times we referred it to Richmond, and five times they referred it back, saying it was purely a local matter.
Well, then I suggest we dispense with the usual procedure and simply use common sense. Gentlemen, Miss Deborah, being a female is automatically eliminated from such consideration.
Automatically, my foot. If you speak anatomically, we are forced to concur that my daughter is indeed a female. However, let me point out that nowhere in the books does the law clearly differentiate between the sexes, except perhaps in certain cases.
Gentlemen, please, order!
Do you want to see her get that license?
Of course not, but I insist that she be stopped within the law.
Right. Order, please! Like this is no time for a private discussion between Judge Page and Mr. Bartley Carson. Order, please. I think I have a solution, gentlemen, to satisfy everyone.
There speaks a politician if I ever heard one.
Gentlemen, look out of this window.
What?
Oh, will somebody wheel the judge's invalid chair over?
I'll stay right where I am.
Very well. Now, look over there, gentlemen, near the big tree. The young lady seated on the bench is Miss Deborah Lynn Page, awaiting the verdict of this council. Now, do you suppose that any young woman as lovely as that would be content to practice the law for the rest of her life? Why, it's against reason, against logic, even against nature.
Poor defenseless nature. Spare us the birds and the bees and get on with it.
Very well. I suggest we grant her the license. Let her be a lawyer. Now, can you think of anyone in this day and age rash enough to be represented in court by a female attorney, however learned she may be? And just how dangerous is a lawyer without clients?
I warn you, gentlemen, my daughter will not be satisfied with an empty victory. You're setting a dangerous precedent.
Mark your votes, gentlemen, if you please.
No matter what the majority votes, I am opposed. And furthermore, I want the record to clearly show that as of this day forward, I am no longer in favor of educating any female beyond the need of simple convenience.
Oh, come now. This whim of hers will not extend beyond her wedding day. Her husband will see to that.
Mr. Gormley, you are a bachelor. Ask any married man here if he can speak for his wife without first consulting her.
Of course, I knew the minute Proctor Gormley and the counsel looked out of the window.
Oh, you did?
Of course. I knew my legal qualifications didn't show, but don't you think I have a most intelligent profile, Father?
Tell me something. How on earth did you manage to attract attention to yourself from outside the window?
I kept flashing a mirror so the sun would send a beam of light into the council room.
I wonder what would happen to American jurisprudence if women ever decide to show their limbs.
That sign is disgraceful. If it's my last act on earth, I'm going to stop you from making a further fool of yourself.
Don't you dare touch that sign.
No.
I have permission from the High Sheriff himself to hang it there. I warn you, I'll sue you for damages to my property.
Go ahead and sue. It'll be the only case you ever get.
Oh, Corey!
Just what are you two fighting about?
Will you please inform your daughter that ethical lawyers do not stoop to advertise themselves as merchants do?
It's not an advertisement. It's a public notice posted in the public welfare.
What are you talking about?
Father, as you well know, a lot of people who come up before the court can't afford to hire counsel. Even though they're entitled to legal aid, their own poverty forces them into a position
Stop
where they...
Stop sounding as if you're running for office and tell me the facts.
I have decided to become a public defender.
A what?
I will defend anyone from anything regardless of their ability to pay. Article 6 of the Amendment to the Constitution guarantees all involved in criminal action the right to legal counsel. Nowhere does it mention money.
Article 6 says that?
Yes.
Funny. I always thought it was Article 7.
Deborah, just look at that moon. It's almost as lovely as you are tonight.
Partly, honey. You were mean to me this afternoon.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let's get married right away. Let's not wait anymore. Deborah? Hmm?
Bradley, honey, you're sweet. You put too much faith in simple biology.
What kind of an answer is that?
No matter how much you make love to me tonight, I'm still going to practice the law tomorrow.
She saw right through my proposal. It didn't work.
Maybe you weren't romantic enough.
Well, did you ever try to make love to a lawyer? There's got to be a loophole somewhere. She's becoming impossible.
I expect Patrick Henry for dinner tonight. Maybe he can help.
So you see why it's important, Mr. Henry.
I suggest you see young John Marshall. At 28, he already knows more law than any other lawyer in the country.
Aren't you being unnecessarily modest, sir?
No. I know juries. Marshall knows the law.
Shortly after that exchange, Proctor Gormley arrived to show off both his new clothes from London and his nephew Roger, who had just returned from making the grand tour.
This is the latest fashion. Look.
You are as vain as a woman.
Not another piece of fabric like this exists in the entire country. Aha, and look here. A matching money pouch.
How does it feel to be home, Roger? And how did you like London?
I preferred Paris.
At your age, that's natural. Where did Devereux go, Bartley? He'll be glad to see Roger again after all these years.
Well, I'll look for her, sir.
You don't have to, Bartley. Here I am. Hello, Father.
Say hello to Roger Gormley and be a proper hostess.
Very well, I will. Hello.
You remember Devereux, don't you, Roger?
I'd rather not remember her any further back than the way she looks this moment. Your servant, Miss Devereux.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Roger just returned from Europe.
Sometime you must tell me about it.
I should like to. Shall we go into the garden? Your pardon, gentlemen.
Well.
Will you excuse me, please, sir?
Where are you going, Bartley?
I have some reading to do. On simple biology.
Bartley, honey, I'm sorry I'm late. Truly I am. But I've just been studying law and order in its natural habitat.
With Mr. Roger Gormley, I notice. Do you have any idea how affected you've become lately? You don't have to talk like a lawyer unless you're trying a case.
Why, Bartley, honey, I'm sorry. I've just come from the jailhouse.
With Gormley. I saw you, and I don't think you should be exposed to such sights.
The sights are nowhere as bad as the smell.
It isn't safe.
I wasn't alone.
You never are these days. Come here.
Bartley, honey.
Please stop talking long enough for me to kiss you.
You never kissed me like that before.
I never kissed you goodbye before, either.
What? Are you jilting me?
Just giving you a chance to make up your own mind without any encumbrances like a disapproving fiancé. And don't cry, Deborah. I won't stay here long enough to feel like a cad.
Stop the tears. You might be able to think straight.
I don't want to think straight, Father. I just don't want to lose Bartley.
You don't have to.
But I don't want to give up Roger either.
You can't have them both. There's a law in this state against multiple marriage.
I recognize my mistake now. I should never have permitted Bartley to even learn I was seeing Roger, much less get jealous of him. But I'll change that.
How?
All I have to do is convince Bartley that I find Roger dull and boring. And that I feel sorry for him and haven't the heart to hurt him. That's all.
You think he'll believe that?
Why not? Roger thinks I'm too tender-hearted to send Bartley away.
What a liar you are.
Oh, I haven't lied enough. I paid Bartley the supreme compliment of being completely honest with him. I should have known better. No man can stand honesty when he can get flattery instead. And I'm going to prove that point to Mr. Bartley Carson.
Bartley, at least, behaved with perfect masculine reason. He went straight to the tavern to drown his sorrow.
Barmaid! Barmaid, I'm thirsty! Even my soul is thirsty, and who cares?
Hello, Bartley. Drinking alone?
Oh, not if you care to join me. Sit down, Roger.
Thank you.
Not at all. I find the sight of you very helpful.
Huh?
I'm drinking to forget what you look like. And as long as I can see you, I'm too sober.
That's very logical.
I'm a very logical man. I'm a lawyer.
Let me order a fresh jug.
No, let me. Barmaid?
I have to shout. She's dead.
Oh.
Marion, will you come here, please?
Who's Marion?
The barmaid.
Oh?
Yes, Mr. Roger. What can I do for you?
Another jug, please.
Anything you want, Mr. Roger.
She winked at you.
I know.
Well, she didn't wink at me. It's going to be my sorrow to go through life unloved and unwinked. I'm a failure at everything.
Here you are, Mr. Roger.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Roger.
Be honest with me. How do you feel about Miss Deborah?
I plan to ask her to marry me.
How can you chase after a barmaid?
Miss Deborah isn't here now.
Oh, that's very practical. I never would have thought of that. Yeah, it's very sleepy out.
Come on, Bartley, I'll take you home.
Go away. Gotta get some sleep.
Marion, bring a cover to put over the gentleman. When that fire dies down, he might take a chill.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Roger Gormley, I believe.
I don't think... I'm sorry, I don't seem to remember your name, sir.
Farley Otis. I work for your uncle by day.
Don't bother with
but
you.
But by night, I'm my own man and my own boss, and I'll thank you to leave my wife alone.
Why don't you go away?
She's my wife, and I'll handle her my own way. I'll beat you within an inch of your life.
Not in my presence, you won't.
Why, the fool you think you're a man of the
Mr. Roger, we'd better get out before the high sheriff comes. Follow me out the back way.
Covered by the blanket, Bartley was unnoticed when the high sheriff arrested Marion Otis for disturbing the peace. Nothing happened to Roger. His uncle Proctor saw to that.
Mrs. Otis, this money bag is full, and it's all yours if you keep my nephew's name out of this case and swear that you hit your husband with a bottle.
I'm willing, but you'll never get Farley to agree, and he's the one Mr. Roger hit.
He'll do as I say as soon as he regains consciousness.
What happens to me?
You'll be fined, sentence will be suspended, and you'll be put on the Philadelphia stage, leaving here tomorrow at noon.
What if something goes wrong?
The judge will have his orders.
I feel safer with a lawyer.
Well, if need be, just ask for Bartley Carson, my attorney. But be sure that Roger's name is never mentioned.
Hand over the money.
Early the next morning, Bartley awakened with a hangover and a resolution which he promptly put to paper and had delivered to my daughter.
A note from Bartley.
Dear Deborah, when a woman persists in assuming masculine prerogatives, she must be expected to forego feminine privileges. Therefore, be assured that I will not rest until I can find a way to have your license for the law taken away. And be further assured that I will fight you as if you were a man.
How silly of him. You know, Father, there is one loophole. It won't do him any good to find it.
Why not?
He intends to fight me fairly and honestly like a man. Oh, I'm not that stupid. I'll fight him like a woman.
A short distance away, Roger Gormley was being awakened to face the day.
Roger, wake up. Oh, my head. Listen to me or you might lose it. You played at billiards here last night with Judge Alan Carroll and me. He's prepared to swear you never left the house.
Oh, you take this too seriously.
I suppose you think a successful candidate for Congress can conduct a campaign from a prison cell?
Who's going to put a first offender in jail for a misdemeanor?
Now listen, Farley Otis died without regaining consciousness. The charge now stands at manslaughter.
You'll never get Bartley to stand still for that. He was there with me.
Oh, for heaven's sake, stop shaking. Bartley left town an hour ago on some private business of his own. By the time he gets back, this case will be a memory. I'll see to that.
I should have known better than to trust any man, especially a gentleman. I suppose that lawyer they promised me is out of town or something.
Yes, he is.
You know what happened? You stood right by when he gave me the money. Why don't you help me? What kind of a man are you?
That's a question I shouldn't care to answer to myself.
Good morning, Sheriff.
Good morning, ma'am. What do you...
What can I do for you?
Well, since no clients look for me, I've come looking for them. Is there anyone here who requires my services?
You should have to leave, Miss Deborah. You'll have to get a pass from the court the next time you want to visit the jailhouse.
When and why?
Since last night when they brought me in. They're all afraid I'll try to save my neck, and they're right.
What can I do to help you?
You'll have to leave, Miss Deborah.
Get me a lawyer, please, before they hang me.
Come along now.
Just a moment, Sheriff. A lawyer doesn't need a pass to confer with a client.
But you're not her lawyer.
Do you want me to handle your case?
You? Well, you're better than nothing, I guess.
Sheriff, did you make a search of the prisoner when she was brought in here last night?
No.
In view of the charges, I want her searched in front of reliable witnesses and everything taken from her person placed in a sealed packet and marked Exhibit A.
Come in. Why, Miss Deborah, what a nice surprise. And how pretty you look.
Thank you. Oh, I hope you're not too busy to see me.
Oh, never, my dear. Come in, sit down. Now then, tell me all about it.
Well, I came to see you on business. You see, it's a question of law. I got my first case.
Congratulations.
Oh, I don't know if I'm going to like being a lawyer if I have to involve my friends. Oh, Mr. Gormley, I don't know how to say this, but I just heard the most shocking accusations made against you.
Oh?
Naturally, I don't believe them. Oh, I hate this.
Oh, now you go right ahead and ask your questions like a good lawyer.
Well, do you know a woman who calls herself Marion Otis?
Farley mm-hmm. Otis works for me, but I never met his wife.
Oh, good. Well, then you won't mind signing a statement to that effect, will you? I feel so businesslike. Just sign right here, please. Father, I've interviewed every one of the people Marion Otis swore was in the tavern that night. They all deny being there, every one of them.
Some people just don't want to be involved with the law for any reason.
Wish I knew if Bartley was being paid to stay away.
That woman could be lying for her own vindictive reasons. Dr. Gormley's no fool. Why would he give you a sworn statement that he never met her? He's too smart to sign anything that could be used against him in court.
That's it. What difference would it make what he signed if this case never comes to trial? Oh, I need your help, Father. I'm going to ride out tonight after Bartley.
How do you know where he is?
If I know Bartley, and all of a sudden I do, oh, he can only be in one place, conferring with John Marshall in Sunnyside, trying to find a way to get my license revoked.
Presupposing he's innocent.
Well, here's what I want you to do for me while I'm gone. Because the minute I leave town, Proctor Gormley has to act. Bartley, what do you know about Marion Otis?
Who? Never heard of her. Who is she?
The barmaid at the tavern.
Oh, the blonde wench.
Don't you dare look so pleased at the mention of any woman's name but mine.
Oh, believe it or not, Deborah, she didn't even look at me. She found Roger much more attractive. I may have been too drunk to move, but I saw the whole brawl.
All of it?
Well, certainly. The sheriff didn't see me underneath that blanket, and I wasn't asleep.
What? Do you realize what it will mean to oppose Proctor Gormley?
Well, there are other cities, other states. A good lawyer can always earn a living.
At the council meeting that followed immediately, Proctor Gormley heard himself charged with inciting to riot, bribery, coercion, and the use of his high public office to obstruct the course of justice.
Which of these charges can you prove?
That you paid Marion Otis the sum of 100 guineas to keep the name of your nephew, Roger, out of the original misdemeanor charge.
I wasn't aware of the distinctive quality of my money. Doesn't all money look the same?
Yes, but not all of it is found in money pouches made of exclusive fabric, like that of your matching waistcoat.
Deborah, the council has just voted to revoke your license to practice the law on the following grounds. Although a woman is of legal age at 18, the law specifically states that a candidate for a license must be over 21. You lack 6 months of that age.
Doesn't the law also state that a married woman automatically achieves that majority?
Gentlemen of the council, May I present Mrs. Bartley Carson? We were married when the meeting adjourned for dinner 2 hours ago.
Deborah!
Oh, don't look so shocked. I told you I'd fight Bartley like a woman, don't you remember? Gentlemen of the council, will you please hold my original petition and list of qualifications? I plan to refile for a license as soon as I return from my honeymoon.
Oh, you haven't won yet. As a married woman, you need your husband's permission to do anything of a legal nature.
I know, Bartley, honey.
And I won't sign...
Bartley, honey, I don't want to make up your mind yet. I'll wait until after our honeymoon.
Romance is produced and directed in Hollywood by Anthony Ellis. Today's story was written by Irene Winston and starred Alice Backus in The Law and Miss Deborah. Featured in our cast were Herb Butterfield, Joseph Kearns, John Stevenson, Parley Bear, Don Diamond, Sam Edwards, and Charlotte Lawrence. Musical supervision by Jerry Goldsmith. This is Dan Cumberly inviting you to hear Romance, transcribed next week at this same time. Every week, a New York opening. Every week, a great musical show studded with stars comes your way on the Woolworth Hour. Tomorrow on this station, make yours a splendid Sunday with all our musical favorites on CBS Radio, and particularly with the Woolworth Hour. Stay tuned for Gunsmoke, which follows immediately over most of these same stations.
Romance from September 22, 1956 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of Romance Untuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.